Well, today's Tuesday, August 15th. We've made it to another Tuesday. We survived.
Now, this week we've seen geopolitical tension rise to a boiling point that threatens nuclear collapse.
We could only be talking about red versus blue, also versus green, and the, you know, power struggle therein.
And we've got Vega, we've got I-9, and we've got Threadripper all clashing together.
All vying for your attention. Isn't it exciting? It's an exciting time. This is an exciting year for hardware.
I can't think of anything else in the news that really happened this week.
Nope, just a bunch of crap.
But we'll read some stories anyway.
Yep. Well, we've got some follow-ups from last week. Do we have any corrections? There was one correction.
I don't remember what it was. It was, I think it was just like somebody was like, oh, the Canadians. There was a lot of people angry about the Canadian story. Because it's like, we do have those laws. We don't have those laws. What he did was wrong. And we reported what they did was wrong. And the judge ruled against it. But this guy still didn't get his stuff back. So, I mean, we get, don't defend your country for doing a terrible thing just because that's not what the laws say.
You probably would have to post on the forum to help us with corrections with references, because we get a lot of people to send us stuff, and it doesn't seem like it's coherent.
We get both sides. And then I'm not going to spend an hour vetting two YouTube comments to do a correction. I'm sorry. Not that dedicated.
So anyway, follow up. We talked about Chrome extensions that have been hijacked. This one's kind of high profile. It's the web developer tools for Chrome.
Yeah, well, it's not the built-in web developer tools. If you were just like, so possibly they were keylogging the web developer. So if you thought that was the tools and you just broke into a cold sweat, it's not the internal tools. No. It's a plugin. Yeah. Well, we talked about people buying plugins. Now they're phishing plugin developers.
This is probably bad because it means that anybody that has a popular Chrome extension or Chrome plugin is vulnerable. And if they do get phished, then, you know, you could have an otherwise completely reputable developer accidentally deliver you malware. And there's not really a lot of protection in the store or platform in terms of like review of these plugins to make sure that they're malware free.
The phishing was posing as a email from Google saying that your plugin doesn't comply to the terms of service. Click here to see why. It's amazing that the web developer tool clicked that. The developer clicked that. You'd think he'd have a little more savvy. He quickly figured it out, but you know, for some amount of time, it was serving ads to the million plus users. So somebody made a little money.
That's probably bad. That's probably real bad. Also, in follow-up news, the FCC has decided to extend the reply deadline to August 30th. So this was, I guess this is a good sign. Public outcry, if there's a sufficiently, you know, I guess you need three Mack trucks worth of public outcry, and then they might maybe do something.
There was a little bit of Congress got into it, too. Like, they're complaining about something about it. So they're like, all right, just settle down. We'll give you 2 more weeks.
Damn it, Mr. Pye. Our constituents keep calling and harassing us and telling us you're doing a terrible job. You need to at least appear like you're doing a good job. I don't know. It's really horrifying. So when you look at some of the stuff the FCC's doing, it's like, is it really this transparent?
Well, we're going to look at some more of that stuff.
It's going to be exciting. I just don't even know. So, yeah, almost all of the new FCC's new advisory panel works for telecoms. So this, you should know that this advisory board is like 100 people. I mean, not really, but it's a lot of people.
And this is all about like, hey, how can we do a better job of, you know, building infrastructure and taking care of all of this? And we need people who are good at that kind of thing. And so there was this one guy and he was like, wow, I've worked for some city for 25 years doing this exact same thing. And we've launched local ISPs and I've literally done all of this. I would like to be on your board. And they were like, no, you will not be on our board. It will be everybody from every major ISP on our board instead.
Yeah, there's only like 4 people apparently that the thing was able to dig up. And the reporter did a really good job here because they tried to interview. They did some freedom of information requests. And it's like, hey, what's the reasoning behind doing this? And the only answer they got was sort of a really snarky, like, well, if we wanted those people in our advisory committee, they would be asking for the blueprint, not helping us build the blueprint. And it's like, well, I don't think that's actually true because this guy's been doing these kinds of rollouts in the infrastructure for 25 years. But okay.
Yeah, I mean, the truth is they want these people in there because that's who's writing the laws and that's who's lining their pockets. And it's so obvious. But we have to live with it. We have to pretend like it's not really happening.
And apparently somebody from like the city of Santa Monica or something called to follow up on his nomination to be added to the board. And the person on the other end in the FCC office just laughed at them hysterically. And there's actually enough evidence of that it showed up in a Freedom of Information request. So it's like when you're being screwed over so hard, I mean, the American people, that they just sort of laugh at you derisively when you call.
Yeah, the first indication that you're not getting in is that you have to use the public telephone number. You know, the real people have the bat phone.
Another thing that has set the internet on fire this week is the statement that, well, maybe Americans don't need fast home internet service, the FCC suggests. Now, this has been covered to death pretty much everywhere. They're talking about changing the definition of broadband again from 25 megabits of download and 3 megabits of upload to 10 megabits of download and 1 megabit of upload.
But even worse, Pi is now making the argument that if you have 10.1 on mobile, then you shouldn't need broadband, right? Because well, because there's no, I mean, but like, aren't they supporting data caps on the other end of that? So it's like, what?
With a straight face, they're going to make the argument, who on earth would need more than 15 gigabytes of data per month? Don't you know the collected works of Shakespeare is only a megabyte? You could download the collected works of Shakespeare 15,000 million times, and it's, you know, totally okay.
So you should be hotspotting your phone. You should be happy with that speed. And once you hit your data cap, you should just go read a book.
Maybe that would help educate the American people to be more outraged that people that have no business leading are no longer in charge. I don't know. This is why don't we have people that know what they're doing, or at least, I mean, I don't know. I guess they know exactly what they're doing, and it's really bad.
The answer is money.
I just, if you really want to be horrified, you should go all the way back to 1996. Wow, that's like a lifetime ago. In 1996, the government did the estimations, and it was basically a fair and balanced estimation. And in the 96 Telecommunications Act, they said that the American people, the average citizen, a household connection, needed to be 45 megabit. 45 megabit symmetrical. Not only that, they promised that most people in America would have that connection by 2006.
Wow. You don't even need that. I mean, okay, highest GDP in the world, supposedly the most exceptional nation in the world, and we can't compete with the internet. There's a metric out there. There's a global, we should be at the top of that list, and we're nowhere near it.
We're definitely at the top of lists where we remove VPNs from China or something.
Apple does not represent America. I'm sorry. The United States, for those you petulant people who...
I think a lot of people outside of America think of America when they see Apple. That's probably bad.
Yeah, that's terrifying. But yeah, we've talked about, of course, the VPN removal. Now, this story is simply about a guy who did not remove his VPN app from the App Store, and he got a very unpleasant visit from some plainclothes police officers.
Yeah, it was really, the way that he describes it sounds very Gestapo-esque. It was basically like, look, you need to remove this right now, and it ends here. Otherwise, something, it turns into a Liam Neeson movie.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just... This is really, you should totally read this because this is really, really horrifying.
Well, the other interesting thing here is they had sort of an insider guy who was commenting on this, and he was talking about how China doesn't necessarily want to stop companies from communicating back with the United States or Europe or wherever they have their home base, but they only want it to go through their state-run telecom company.
Yes.
So it's not that they want to shut it all down, but they want to control it. And they want the business. You know, it turns out that's good money. If you get a VPN doing all of your data back home all day long.
I think they describe some sort of licensing process where a VPN provider goes through a licensing process where, you know, presumably some sort of listening device or whatever is installed on the network. I don't know that. they did actually get a comment out of Tim Cook for the comment on this. And his comment on this is like, well, it's unfortunate that we have to do this, but we have to comply with local law. And as he says that, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up because I think back to the FCC, or I mean the FBI case where it's like, we got to unlock these phones, and it's like, this is probably bad.
Yeah, he's going to do whatever, wherever the money goes. And I hate Apple, you know, up there with the next guy, probably toward the 99th percentile, but can you really blame them for doing this? I don't think you can.
Well, I mean, Apple is a business designed to make money first and foremost. They're not... You know, they're not going to do the right thing. They're going to do what is in their best interests. So,
just like Google and the story that we will not touch.
SoundCloud. Listen, we can touch SoundCloud. SoundCloud is saved by emergency funding as the CEO steps aside. So apparently emergency funding, like the most surprising thing about this article is emergency funding is apparently $169 million. Now I could use some emergency funding.
I just have a minor emergency. So they did go through with their 170 staff removal. So they cut, you know, it's a skeleton crew and they got their money. The CEO stepped down and they're going to try to keep it going. But I don't think they really have like a business plan for how do we make money with this now? It's just, okay, this will keep us going until 2018.
Is SoundCloud the Twitter of audio companies or audio distribution on the internet? I don't know. Maybe they'll be just fine on venture capital from now until the end of time. I don't know.
You think if Trump started a SoundCloud account, that would help him like it did with Twitter? You think maybe he could do EDM in his spare time?
I don't. That would probably be bad. Like if he can just hit a button and record whatever random thought he has as audio, that's probably not a good thing.
He would love that, I'm sure.
It's a micro audio blogging platform. That's not a good direction to go in, guys. This is really bad. So China's also working on car recognition, but car recognition without using license plates. It's a high-resolution camera system that is going to use these heat map things to look for defects in your car, scratches in the paint, things that make your car, bumper stickers, you know, whatever, and use that to identify vehicles rather than number plates.
It's hilarious that this technology is called a repression network. I mean, it's not because they're repressing the citizens, although they are, but that's just the name of how this AI works. But yeah, it's incredible. They are looking to, because, you know, car models are too similar. And I guess maybe the Chinese aren't as big a fans as the little family stick figure stickers and the, you know, the ribbon stickers. So they want to be able to tell them apart, even if they're the same model. And this thing actually seems to be really effective at that.
That's very, very surprising. You know, a common problem that comes up with corporations and data and the centralization of infrastructure is a lot of corporations want to aggregate that data and do analytics on it and provide that data to third-party companies to also do analytics and analysis. Think like a health insurance company that wants to analyze every single thing that all of the subscribers to the health insurance plan do. But you can get yourself into trouble when you give third parties people's medical records. And so there's this problem of de-anonymizing data, and it takes surprisingly little information to de-anonymize things. And so clearly the academics and scholars in the UK have been involved with this new proposal, which is, let's just criminalize re-identification of anonymized user data rather than fix the problem in the first place.
Yeah, this is, I mean, criminalize. That, I guess that's a good thing, but it does seem like you could do this by accident, especially if you're not sure exactly what's going on with your data set. And maybe, okay, so let's say I'm working on it and I contract somebody for that and then they take it and they do that. Is that on me? There's a lot of questions here.
This is really, I don't think this is a problem that can be solved in law. I think that the way that you solve this is to have, you know, I don't know, maybe the CIO, maybe you make CIOs legally liable for these kinds of things, and then the problem would solve itself really quickly. But, you know, undoing anonymized data, I mean, for researchers and things like that, because we got some really clever research out of exactly how much data it takes to de-anonymize anonymous data, and it turns out it's practically nothing. So this is not going to stop state-sponsored actors. This is not going to stop malevolent corporations. So,
well, that's a good question. So if this is a criminal act, let's say the blockchain, for example, is that anonymized data? So if you're a cop and you're tracking down somebody who's laundering money, are you de-anonymizing? And can that then be thrown out in court?
That is a good and interesting question. What about data gathered from somebody as part of like a private eye or for you to do your own investigation? Like say that someone has a criminal act against you and you gather data to try to figure out who that is. Does that count as de-anonymizing data?
I imagine they would use warrants to sidestep that. Like, okay, we've got this Amazon data and we know that Bob did this, but it's been anonymized, so we can't know that. So we'll just go and demand it from Amazon and they'll give it to us.
Well, Amazon will give you the anonymized data, which you can then de-anonymize because you had the warrant, I guess.
Oh.
I don't know. It just doesn't. There's going to be some problems with that approach. And the article makes it sound like the people that are trying to address this really hadn't thought through those problems.
Yeah. That seems, they were just like halfway through the explanation, they were like, oh God, it's lunchtime. Criminalize it.
You know who else likes gathering data? Disney! Disney's gathering apps on your kids, apparently. 42 Disney apps are allegedly spying on children.
There's some kind of COPPA, Child Online Protection something something. And clearly, these are apps aimed at very young children. You know, I mean, it's like, in no way could you construe that these apps are anything but for toddlers. And they're totally collecting information and spying on the children and building advertiser profiles.
We had no idea in the 70s that, you know, He-Man and all of the terrible Hanna-Barbera cartoons of the 70s would produce, like, the most unbelievable consumer children of the 80s, but it totally happened. But Disney knows. Disney knows all too well. And this is how they plan to exploit it.
Plan?
Or are, I guess.
So, yeah, if your kids love those Disney apps, just know that they're being, their advertiser profile has already begun.
How do you separate fake news from not fake news? Well, it's harder because apparently there are social media botnets that perpetuate fake news.
Yeah, this one, this one's kind of weird because they go into the Russian thing and they hit a lot of like the...
It's the Russians. It's always the Russians with their botnets.
Yeah, they blame a lot of the right-wing sites for being fake news. I felt like this article was pretty, was slanted pretty hard. But what it does bring out, and I think what they're leaving out is, yes, of course, the right-wing propaganda happens, but happens on both sides. Everybody's doing it. There are all these fake accounts that will promote some sort of media, you know, whatever it is. And the way it works is they target, like, they don't just, they know that you're, the bot is not going to get the traffic. So the bots are designed to try and engage influential people on social media. So your bot will be like, oh my God, at influential person, did you see this story? And then that person will read it. And if they retweet it, then your bot has done its job.
Wow. That's just, I don't know. I mean, I guess that's effective. But so we're back to the problem of people are not critical readers and are generally just really ignorant. Well, I mean, a lot of people want to believe that Obama is going to totally give me $7,000 off my home mortgage. I mean,
but also I think the problem is, you know, we've gamified or monetized the retweet and the like, and they see that headline and they have the same feeling that the news organizations do. It's like, oh, people are going to see that and they're going to click retweet immediately. I'm not even going to read it because, you know,
prevent cheese from spoiling with this one weird trick. Oh, don't click on those things. That's the problem. That's the root problem. So more about the Russians, apparently. The Russian group that hacked the DNC used the NSA attack code in the attack on hotels. So this was a kind of an attempt to gain control of hotel infrastructure in order to then target high-profile individuals or individuals of interest that were staying at these hotels.
Yeah, they would take control of the hotel Wi-Fi, and then they would redirect the requests to a site that would then steal credentials or something like that. So like if you're in a conference room at a hotel, you were using the Wi-Fi and you were trying to log in somewhere, you might have been caught by one of these pages that tried to steal your credentials.
Yay, security. You know, we didn't have a picture of it, but from DEF CON, somebody hacked the faucets. Yes, the faucets.
Do they have the non-touch?
Yeah, well, it's there was a, they do advertising in the bathrooms at Vegas, and those apparently run Linux, so it's a little LCD screen on the faucet as you're washing your hands. Mm-hmm. And so there was a stack trace on one of those. We should have put a picture of that. That's really funny, because there's a stack trace on my faucet.
Oh, the Internet of Things. Who could have predicted that it would turn out this way?
Infinite headaches and infinite dimensions. Oh, it's so nice. Well, HBO, in case you haven't heard, was hacked. And the hackers got a lot of shows that had not been released yet, including Game of Thrones. Well, turns out HBO offered them $250,000 not to release it. And now I think they're offering the $250,000 bounty payment thing. So...
Yeah, well, this is I think this is their way of being like, okay, we can't give into this. We can't be seen as weak here because, you know, we'll be a pincushion. People will be destroying us every day to try to get these. So instead they're like, well, we do have a bounty program and you did find this flaw, so we're willing to pay you for that. The funny thing about it is, you know, they're like, give us two more weeks, which was probably just a stalling tactic, and we might give you this money. And this guy just immediately leaked that email to the press. He was like, let me just embarrass you further.
Speaking of embarrassing actions where it's been taken too far, apparently U.S. diplomats in Cuba have lost their hearing. So I don't really know what's going on with this. Was this the Cuban intelligence service, or was this the U.S. like, or an unknown actor? I don't know. This article also blames the Russians potentially.
Everything is the Russians. Yeah, nobody. I mean, the Cubans are obviously saying this was absolutely not us. We would never do this. But it is not just the diplomats, but their families as well. Mm. So something about where they live, not where they work, is some sort of ultrasonic thing is happening. And they're not sure if it was supposed to be an attack or this is some sort of like monitoring thing.
That's gone horribly wrong.
They didn't test properly.
It's one of those electronic mosquito repellers that they got at the at the discount electronics store. And it turns out that's what's giving them hearing loss. No, I don't know. But that would be funny if it turned. It's like, oh my gosh, it's this intelligence thing. And it's like, no, it's just the houses that you're staying in. Whoops. Oh, so this one we want to include because it's not Bitcoin or cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
The FBI says the Islamic State, you know, the terrorists, are using eBay and PayPal to channel money to the U.S. They're not using cryptocurrency. That's really important. Like, the headline should have been, the Islamic State is not using cryptocurrency, so leave it alone, guys. Come on.
But the headline will be, instead, Islamic State getting money into the U.S., tighter controls needed on cryptocurrency. Now, this actually happened a while back. It was like 2015, 2016. And it was a small amount of money. So they sold printers on eBay, which this guy in turn would never send because nobody expected it. And they would funneled in like 10 grand, a little under 10 grand, enough for him to buy supplies to establish communication with them back wherever they were.
So what gave them away was no one would ever pay $10,000 for printers.
I don't know how many printers it was. This guy's been arrested since then, but they've sort of wormed out how he got all his stuff. He might have admitted it.
And now it can be covered in the news.
Yeah.
So this next story is a total non-story, but it's amazing. But it's also really terrible because it's a sort of a non-story. So scientists have hacked a computer using DNA. This is kind of silly because what happened was scientists created an arbitrary strand of DNA that when read into the sequencing machine would cause the sequencing machine to crash and overflow, things like that. But it turns out the software did not actually have a vulnerability that would do that. They had to introduce a vulnerability into the software in order to do that.
Yeah, they were really chasing the headline. So, I mean, it's cool that you could encode DNA. We've talked about that before. And you could even do it in such a predictable way that you can buffer overflow. But it turns out the people that built this software and these machines were like, hey, that could possibly happen. Let's protect against it. And they had to go through a lot of trouble to turn that off.
Oh, some computer scientists sanitized their inputs for once. That is a news story.
and it was the biologists.
Oh, a meat pistol. If you were following, DEFCON is just, DEFCON's over, but there's just all these stories that are coming out of DEFCON. It sounds like an exciting place.
There's a lot of drama going on at DEFCON, that's for sure.
Well, the drama now is between Salesforce.com, the, CRM software, like mega behemoth. I mean, they're a huge company. And their former director of security, like their security red team, their actual penetration testers, they were scheduled to give a talk at DEFCON, and they did. But apparently some executive tweeted them 30 minutes before they were due to go on stage. Hey, don't go on stage. But it's DEFCON, so your cell phone's not going to work. And your work cell phone should be like in a lead case in your room. And you should just have a burner phone. So they didn't get the message. And they were fired as soon as they gave the talk.
Now, this software is not about actually gaining access to a system. It's more of like a management system once you have access to deploy all these different things. It's kind of a quality of life thing, for hacking. And they're looking to open source it. They're really proud of it. And they're like, hey, we have this really cool thing. We're going to do a talk about it. We're going to open source it. And Salesforce was like, oh, yeah, you should do that. And then at the last minute, some lawyer was like, well, what are you thinking? And yeah, to fire someone over a text message that they didn't get, it's pretty crazy.
That is completely crazy. Of course, being on the developer side of Salesforce.com doesn't surprise me in the least. I've dealt with far, far worse from the Salesforce API. So, it's not really surprising that the executive side of things is just like the API.
And you can tell these guys, like within Salesforce, they had to be like terrified of them and totally, because if you look at this, did you look at the presentation? There's so many rare Pepes in that presentation. So these guys were like, just probably off in a closet somewhere. But super valuable because all day long they were sitting there trying to get into that system and probably succeeding. And, you know, you don't have to pay those bounties when you just pay somebody a salary.
We have we've heard that those guys get a number of job offers. So congratulations, guys. It's probably, you know, don't focus so much on the door before you that has closed. Look at all the doors before you that have opened. You're going to be just fine.
Yeah. Well, especially now that they're a little bit higher profile, you know, they're like famous hackers. So I think it's going
to
be good for them.
Let this be a lesson to you. Don't ever let your employer tell you not to give a presentation at DEF CON, because chances are it's going to work out better for you in the long run.
Not to mention, like, firing your penetration testing team over a weird reason unexpectedly.
At DEF CON.
Did you change the passwords?
At DEF CON.
These guys could really retaliate if they wanted to, I bet.
Oh, Lord. VPNs. We always talk about VPNs as a way to protect yourself, but there's always the footnote, and we always mention, although not everybody listens carefully, that you have to trust your VPN provider. And so there have been a few news stories lately, and we wanted to include this one to sort of illustrate you need to be able to trust your VPN provider. So this VPN provider has been accused of sharing customer traffic with online advertisers.
This is Hotspot Shield. Now, we've talked about when you're looking for a VPN, one of the things you want to look for is one that says they do not log. Right. So, but are they lying about that? And so Hotspot Shield claimed that didn't do this kind of thing. I don't know if they said they didn't log, but they said they didn't share. But this is a free VPN. So there's a premium version, and there's the free ad-driven version. And what they were doing was giving your browsing data to those advertisers so they could advertise to you more specifically. And people are not happy about that.
This is not useful unless you are using the VPN to get around geo-blocking or something like that. If you're using the VPN to try to have a little bit more privacy, this is not good. You might have a modicum more privacy in the sense that your browsing data is going to be aggregated with a whole bunch of other people's. But when the provider is providing individually identifiable records, which we presume is what was happening here, then you sort of lose your main reasons for running a VPN in the first place.
And as we have just learned, de-anonymizing has become very good. Good enough that the politicians have found out about it.
Yeah.
So you can imagine how far along it is.
Yeah, that's a good way. It's like when the politicians are thinking about trying to deal with something, it's old news,
Yeah. Really
old news. Well, switching gears a little bit to talk about hardware, Threadripper. Threadripper is out. Our review of Threadripper is going to be out soon-ish. We're working on it. But in the meantime, Hot Hardware has got a review of the 1950X. That's the 16-core desktop CPU, and the 1920X, that is the 12-core. And it's stacking up pretty good. This is the new, you know, single-socket TR4 socket from AMD. It is mammoth, quad-channel memory, 64 PCI Express lanes. It's looking like this is the new high-end desktop winner for pretty much anything that anybody would want to do that needs a high core count, you know. Lots of virtual machines, lots of rendering production, things that need a lot of CPU horsepower across a lot of cores.
Yeah, I don't think it's any surprise that when it comes to high core count, Threadripper is just wiping the floor. They're getting some really, really big numbers over the i9 when all of the cores can be utilized. Now, of course, Intel's still got that boost clock, so when you're talking about lower core count stuff, they'll pull ahead, but I don't think it's enough to merit the difference in price at this point.
No, not at all. I mean, if you look at the 7900X, that's a 10-core, 20-thread part versus the 16-core, 32-thread part. It's a hard sell. I mean, the 8-core, you know, the pricing on the 8-core is around $600, $650, something like that, depending on some other things. But they gimped the PCIe lanes. So if you're using a lot of high bandwidth PCI Express devices, you can't really use those on the 28-lane system without running into bottlenecks, especially if you're using high performance cards for machine learning or anything like that. So I don't know, the PCIe lane situation is not something that a lot of people talk about, but for professional workstations and commercial workloads, the PCIe lanes are kind of important.
I think maybe the best thing here that can be said about this is that Threadripper is probably the winner, but you have to put that probably in there because, you know, there's all the different use cases. But the great thing about it is there is serious, serious competition. I mean, the argument will go on. It will not be settled. And that's great because you want two companies trying to kill each other because you win in that situation.
Now, Intel is planning on releasing more core count desktop CPUs. Those are not yet available, but I think the 12 core one will be out by the end of August in the official stuff that Intel has announced. And then they're also planning an 18 core CPU that will set you back $2,000.
Well, that's actually the next story. So if you want to, the surprising thing about the 18 core, 2.6, that high clock speed, they couldn't do it with the high core count. Now, it will boost up really high for that one core. But
when or two cores or whatever.
Yeah, but when you're using all of them, 2.6.
It's not really that the silicon can't handle it either. It's that the power delivery is kind of a problem. You know, as we've seen with the 7900X and overclocking, it produces a significant amount of heat. And heat is the enemy of stability, especially when we're talking about CPU dies, especially when we're talking about Intel's process here. So, again, nobody has these. I don't think anybody even outside the lab has the engineering samples on these, but Intel feels like, oh, 2.6 is going to be sort of where we land on this. So that's very surprising.
Sub 3 for all of those final three, right, I think?
Yeah.
So
2.9.
They didn't get the multi-core speeds. I'm really surprised by that. You think they were like trying real hard during all this, and that's why they didn't release them, and then they're like, we can't do it, just put them out.
Well, let's not forget, you know, just a couple of years ago Intel had all that marketing that was like, we're green, we're about the planet, we're about, you know, low power utilization, and Intel was doing super innovative stuff for mobile CPUs. I mean, we had those mobile CPUs that are like 7.5 watts and within spitting distance of their desktop counterparts that are, you know, 100 watts. And I guess that's sort of all out the window now, because they're just like, we don't know, just dump a ton of power into it. We need to make it go fast.
Well, that's sort of what AMD's doing, right? So it's like they're over there cutting down a forest. It's like, yeah, well, look how cool we are. Those big chips, it's like this, basically a V12. Just put a V12. Hey, I'll take it.
But for, you know, for gamers and everyman, 16 cores, 12 cores, it's not really super useful. You know, the winning thing for AMD, honestly, is the Ryzen 5, because you get 6 cores. 4 cores is not really enough. It hasn't really been enough for a couple of years now. Ryzen 5, especially the 1600X, it's 4.1 gigahertz out of the box on the XFR. So it's really an incredible value. And that is why Intel has moved up the timetable on the 6-core regular desktop CPUs. These are Coffee Lake, the 8th generation. They're announcing this on, what, August 21st?
This is the Eclipse Day, yeah.
Yeah, so the Intel Eclipse Day. I guess this is where they're going to be like, we're going to eclipse on the desktop or something. So this is going to be 6-core. So that means we're going to have a 6-core CPU available on X299, as well as a socket 1151 type socket. Now, it's not going to exactly be 1151 because the chipset's not compatible, but it's going to be something like that, dual channel and, you know, dual channel memory and all that.
As we covered last week, probably not going to be compatible with the existing motherboards. So, gotta buy a new motherboard. It's going to be expensive. I don't know about that.
Why you do this, Intel? Why you do this? I don't know. And you can get the Kaby Lake, you know, the 4-core CPUs on X299. There is a 6-core X299 CPU, but for good, don't buy that. You need, it's the only real options right now on X299 are the 8-core or the 10-core. And the only real advantage on the 10-core is that out of the box, the Linux stability is like perfect. I mean, I honestly really think that the higher end CPUs are just repurposed Xeon CPUs, and that's why the clocks are relatively low, because in Xeon you want the low clock speed for maximum stability, but it doesn't matter as much outside the server workload. So it's like, yeah, we'll just use the same CPUs, just dump a ton of power into it. I mean, it's not really that simple. I'm oversimplifying, but that's what it feels like. Well, Microsoft has had a bad week. Consumer Reports has pulled the Microsoft laptop recommendation. Now, to be sure, Consumer Reports really likes the Surface, Surface Book, Surface Pro, whatever, but they don't like the maintenance aspect of the Surface and the Surface Pro, saying that like half of them have maintenance problems in a year.
Yeah, and this, so Consumer Reports testing was positive for this. This is purely based on customer complaints. So Consumer Reports, you know, they got their subscribers. If you're a subscriber and you call them up and you're like, I bought this based on your recommendation and it's crap and it's doing this, they'll pull it later and they'll, you know, make a big deal about it. And that's what they've done here.
So yeah, you have maintenance problems with your Surface whatever device, let us know. I really like the Surface Pro 3. I've been way less impressed with all the other Surface devices that I've gotten my hands on. Surface Pro 3 was like, yeah, they finally got it right. Now they'll just improve on this, and not so much.
Apparently won't boot a lot of the time, locks up. I'm sure updates are a nightmare, because updates are a nightmare on the most... rock solid computer, you get update problems. So
Well, to be completely fair, managing updates on a Surface, anything, on all the Surface devices, the updates come from Windows Update. And there's an EFI stub so that you can actually, like Windows Update can actually update the EFI on the Surfaces. And it does. It totally does, because a lot of the problems that they've had are hardware-level problems. The problem fundamentally is the PCI Express, the proprietary PCI Express interface that Microsoft did on the Surface Book is crap. It is just utter crap. It does not hold up well. So the Surface Book in particular is problematic. The docking station also, whatever they did for the docking station, is pretty much crap. The docking station is better than a pure USB docking station, but the longevity and reliability of a user docking and undocking, cycling and uncycling, it has not held up. The hardware is really nice. They get the right idea. They need to keep iterating. It's not bad, but they should have used Thunderbolt or some kind of like Zero Insertion Force Thunderbolt or something, and they would have been okay there. But they didn't, and so I think the Consumer Reports thing is kind of deserved, although it is probably true that a third to a half of the complaints are probably around that whole Windows Update thing going wrong, trying to update the hardware drivers to try to fix other problems. Shouldn't have fired your testers, Microsoft. I don't know what to tell you. Intel's got a new SSD form factor. This is the Ruler form factor. So this is just a stick with lots and lots of flash chips on it.
Yeah, of course, you know, a lot of modern SSDs, there's nothing in there. It's just a little box. And they're like, we're wasting a lot of space. Let's come up with something new. And this one is for the rack. You know, you put it right on the rack and you get a petabyte.
In a 1U server.
Not bad.
That is not bad. Netflix is probably bought. No, I think Netflix is probably want something a little less expensive than that. But a petabyte in solid state storage, really fast, hyper-converged appliances. Yeah, that might be a thing. That might be something.
They claim it's more stable, too, in this packaging. So, good news.
Another study that we can file under the Captain Obvious is Uber and Lyft may cause lower car ownership in big cities.
So Austin had both of these companies, decided they didn't want them anymore, and kicked them out. And some people were like, ooh, here's a chance to look at data. And what they discovered was that when these companies were there and then left, car use and car ownership spiked up. It's more than a statistical aberration. You know, I was like, wow, that's a lot. So they're saying that, you know, extrapolate that when these become more and more prevalent, then car ownership is going to go down. And you got to keep in mind that cars are an economy of scale. If you can't make, you know, ever how many million Ford Probes, you're not going to make Ford Probes. You know, that's why some really popular car models just go away, because people are like, we love these. It's like, yeah, you love them, but not enough people love them. We can't make money, so we're not making them anymore. And that could have a big impact on the car industry.
So this is going to be really neat if that actually, in the city, it's not just the car ownership. There's also the maintenance and the upkeep and things like that. And so even if somebody's like, I need to take Uber to work, you know, three times a month because I can't take mass transit or whatever, it's still going to be way less than a car payment and a parking space and maintenance and insurance and all the other expenses that go with owning a car. And not as expensive as a cab. So that's kind of neat. Maybe the cab companies could move to a subscription service where you get like 10 rides a month for X number of dollars. That might be a way to compete with Uber. Their margins would probably be better on that, honestly.
Yeah, I would probably be good for the surrounding city too, because it's going to have that Amazon Prime mental effect where it's like, oh God, I got three uses left. Let's do something. We got to do something. I can't waste these.
Well, Disney and Netflix are kind of in a row. Netflix is discussing keeping Disney's Marvel and Star Wars films.
First we have to talk about, so this was kind of like, all this, a bunch of stories happened this week. I just put in the one at the end. First, Disney was like, you know what, Netflix? We're not going to give you our movies anymore. We're going to create our own streaming service.
Not just movies. It's all their kids shows and stuff like that, too.
Yeah, and if you ever look at Netflix's most popular, like most watched.
It's all SpongeBob.
It's all kid stuff. People just sit their kids down in front of the TV and turn it on. They go do math or whatever. And so Disney's saying, hey, let's start our own service because we have most of that content. And so now they're negotiating hard. It's like, we would love to keep these Marvel movies. People sure do like these.
But Disney's like, no, we must force people to use our own streaming service. Well, this is a PSA. Don't buy Disney's streaming service, because there needs to be an intermediary there that's not Disney, because good Lord, that's just terrible.
Well, it's getting splintered up. It's like, okay, you got to have the HBO one. now you're going to have the Disney one. Are you going to still have Netflix? And maybe you're going to have Amazon Prime. And before you know it, your monthly bill, even though it's segmented, is back up to that $100. So you haven't won by cutting the cord.
Well, this week's news in Amazon and how Jeff Bezos can take over companies like Blue Apron, Amazon is looking to new food technology for home delivery. So this is about basically being able to get you everything that you need for home-cooked meals, but not exactly and with no headache.
So the modern way of doing this, so what you have to do is you're going to seal some cooked food or whatever inside a bag. How do you keep bacteria from growing in that bag so that I don't just get a bag of mold unless you refrigerate it? And there are ways to do it, but it has to do with like raising the temperature in water, which turns everything into mush, you know, basically boils it. And this new company has a way to microwave it. They just like throw it in there and they microwave it for so many seconds. And it supposedly kills everything that would breed inside your food. So they're looking to, you would get a bag of food that's unrefrigerated, but is fresh food.
I seem to remember a skit from Futurama or something like that, where they're like, yeah, yeah, we kill all the living things in this. It's like, we just expose it to the same radiation that would have inside a black hole. And that kills everything. And it's completely fine. And it's like, doesn't that make this thing irradiated? I mean, it's like, oh no, it's only slightly more radioactive than the background radiation. It's fine. It's not really like that. I'm making fun of that for a joke because they're going to be like, oh my God, it's not ionizing radiation. What's wrong? Yes, I know. Thank you. It's cool. It's cool.
But it's definitely not fresh food. No. And, you know, with all the hipsters being on that trip, you got to wonder how people are going to relate to it. But it's also going to be prime delivery on just meals that you just probably going to heat them up for like 30 seconds. It's not refrigerated and just eat it. God, that's convenient.
I really want the Black & Decker food rehydrator from Back to the Future. Like, if meal convenience becomes that, like, I can just stick the thing in and hit it, and it's like, oh, look at that. I've got steak and mashed potatoes and gravy and corn on the cob and a roll, and it just, like, I don't have to put any work into that. That, man, that would be an incredible service to mankind.
They're starting up with beef stew and something else. But, like, think about it. You're just going to get a sack of beef stew that you can just open it up and eat it if you wanted. And it'd be great for the upcoming nuclear holocaust. Let's hope they get that done soon.
Amazon is adding ticketing services to their things that they offer. I guess, I was reading this and I was thinking API, but on reflection, I don't think it really talks about offering the API. So
Ticketmaster has a monopoly. Like, the reason your concert tickets are $150, most of that money is going to Ticketmaster. And they're kicking a big part of what they get back to the venues and saying, hey, we're the only one selling your tickets, right? 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 And, you know, they're giving them that money. So a lot of musicians have spoken out against this and tried to fight it and have all failed. I think the company that owns Ticketmaster owns like billboards too, and a lot of the venues, whatever. They have this stranglehold on the business. So Amazon is trying to get into that. They want to sell tickets.
Well, they could definitely sell tickets from a software standpoint. I mean, offer an API, just an easy way to manage tickets and seats and things like that. Just a good piece of software combined with Amazon's e-commerce thing. It seems like a bunch of Amazon interns could code that in a weekend, and then if people will actually use it, that remains to be seen.
And not to mention, counterfeit tickets are a big deal. Like, they're so valuable. When something is worth $200, $300, counterfeit it, right? So they could switch to mobile QR code type technology, something like that, to get you in the door. It could be really convenient. They could also leverage Prime. So, like, imagine if you could get Weird Al tickets a week early with Amazon Prime. Are you signing up?
Well, if Weird Al can get a cut of that, Weird Al will be real interested in that for sure versus well, the venue fees.
I don't know if it would be so much that he's going to get a cut of it, but the ticket's going to cost you $50 less, which is going to help him a lot.
Well, developers have filed suit against Apple in China. And so this is, wait, what? It's an antitrust complaint.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I thought the Chinese government was like, no, antitrust, copyright, we don't do that here. What are you talking about? But they are, I think because, you know, Apple is the outsider, the American company, they might actually get away with this. But they're saying that if you're a Chinese developer for the App Store, it's really difficult. You have to jump through a lot of hoops, and they won't really tell you what the rules are, and they're kind of weird about it. And so a bunch of them got together, and they're suing.
This is going to be a story that we follow for a while because it's kind of interesting. But I guess that's just how business is done in China, as Tim Cook said earlier in the program. Wisconsin. We talked about Wisconsin getting a Foxconn factory. Foxconn makes everything. I mean, if you look at like the sockets on your motherboard, Foxconn probably made the CPU socket on the motherboard that you have. They do a ton of electronic assembly. They make iPhones. They're one of the largest companies for putting your electronics together on planet Earth, and they're opening a factory in Wisconsin, of all places.
This is a big deal because a lot of the jobs in America that used to be manufacturing jobs have gone overseas. And companies like Foxconn have caused that because it's so cheap to make this stuff overseas. And so now they're talking about, hey, let's bring it to Wisconsin. This is a big win. At the risk of introducing politics to the show, this was one of Trump's major accomplishments that he'd be like, hey, look what I did. I brought Foxconn to Wisconsin. But it's turning out this might not actually be good for the state.
Yeah, they did an analysis on the deal that was offered to Foxconn, and apparently the analysts have come to the conclusion that the tax breaks and that sort of thing mean that the state is not going to break even on this investment for 20 years.
Yeah. So, you know, the tax dollars, it's like, wow, we brought manufacturing in, we brought in jobs, and we're going to generate tax revenue. No, we're not. Not in our lifetime.
Now, it may be possible that they get revenue indirectly from having, you know, people doing factory work and their salaries and, you know, like payroll tax and things like that. But I don't know. I don't know about that. It remains to be seen.
It also remains to be seen if they will get full employment that they expected from this thing, because they're not going to launch with every job filled. So if it doesn't pick up, if they're not, it's not good for Foxconn to make things here, they might run it on the low crew the entire time.
I seem to remember that we covered a story about this same kind of thing on a smaller scale in like Pennsylvania, and that factory ultimately never hired anywhere near the number of employees that it was projected to. Yeah. Well, Elon Musk. Oh, we can't do an episode of the news without Musk. Tesla is developing self-driving tech for semis, and they want to test it in Nevada. So this is not really, I mean, we've almost covered this in the past, but they're actually talking to the Nevada DMV, and it looks like they're ready for testing.
Yeah, now these are trucks with nobody in the cab. And they do have a new technology here that's maybe a little bit more impressive, and that is the platoon feature of these trucks. So you might have one truck in the lead with a dude driving, or at least monitoring, and a bunch of trucks following that truck. And so they know exactly where to go, because it's like, okay, we just go where this truck goes. Oh, there's construction here? Well, we slow down because that truck slowed down, or we just follow. And that seems like a really interesting way to do the trucking thing. I mean, if you can do 10 trucks driven by one guy.
And 10 trucks that will notify that one guy if they have a problem, if they're low on fuel or they get a flat, yeah, or there's, you know, some other problem and you've got a human being right there to deal with it. But still, a 10-to-1 reduction in cost of operation is going to be non-trivial, especially you think about companies like UPS and FedEx and things like that, where they're doing long-haul trucking, even just any kind of shipping. That's still going to be hugely disruptive for that market without putting literally everybody out of work overnight. So there's that, at least. Facebook is now offering TV content on the watch tab, because I guess the friends that you're interested in stalking are not good enough.
Well, they're looking to put more ads in front of people, and people get a little testy when you put ads in front of their messaging and, you know, friends and stuff. So they think, well, maybe ads will be more acceptable in front of television. Now, this is just like they're partnering with people now. They're bringing in TV shows and stuff like that. I don't think this is like your own content yet. But with the adpocalypse, a lot of people are looking to diversify, get a new revenue stream for their content. If we ever have to go to Facebook, that's going to be a defeat.
I think we're planning to share our content on Facebook, do a better job of that. We created some stuff on Facebook, but gotta like, favorite, and subscribe.
It's a loss, but it turns out maybe you do have to use social media to keep growing.
Favorite is not a thing that has been possible on YouTube for some time now.
Apparently. Some people don't get the joke.
Oh, we talked about Apple's new headquarters and the amazingly immaculate-looking open office floor plan. Turns out that Apple employees are openly rebelling against the open floor plan because They're mostly developers and programmers. Well, not mostly, but there are a lot of developers and programmers and managers and things like that. And it's like open floor plans. It's like if you got to use your brain, open floor plan generally is bad.
It's funny because the top brass, none of them had to go to the open floor plan. They have offices. And this guy quoted the Silicon team. And the guy that runs the Silicon team, and when he first saw the plan, every word started with F. And the Silicon team never moved into this. And they will not. They have their own building outside.
It's like, come on to the mothership, Silicon team. No. No, it's not happening. Monsanto was its own ghostwriter for some safety reviews. Huh. So this is a situation where we needed an independent reviewer to review the safety of Monsanto products and or the environment. And the independent reviewer was from Monsanto?
They weren't quite from Monsanto. They were hired by Monsanto, but they were totally, you know, outside. And Monsanto has made many statements saying, we hired these people. They were autonomous. We didn't influence them at all. And then we had some Freedom of Information email releases. And they showed much the opposite, that Monsanto was very much involved in editing these papers. And now it wasn't quite as bad as, like, these guys were like, oh, God, this causes cancer. And Monsanto was like, no, it doesn't. It was more, you know, it was smaller changes than that. But still, it was like, we should reword this to say this flowery thing instead of, you know, the scary thing that you wrote. And for the most part, they went along with it.
Something, something dihydrogen monoxide joke. I don't know. Well, some enterprising individuals have found a way to hack self-driving cars, although not probably in the way that you think. They're defacing signs which confuse self-driving cars.
And importantly, you can see these signs here. A human has no problem. Like, you look at that third stop sign, you would not think anything's wrong with that, right? A city worker would be like, there's nothing wrong with the stop sign or that right turn sign. But it turns out all of these signs that you're looking at, a self-driving car recognizes as 45 mile per hour speed limit.
So what you're saying is that for the next 6 months to a year, every time I have to prove that I'm not a bot, Google reCAPTCHA is going to be like, which sign is this?
So, of course, why would anybody do that? Well, because people are terrible and people will do this. Now, they are looking at ways of doing like contextual algorithms for the car. It's like, well, I'm traveling down the interstate and I see a stop sign. Maybe that's not a stop sign, you know, but they're going to have to get better at dealing with this kind of thing because as we know, as we've seen, like in Mexico and in parts of Europe, people get real angry at self-driving cars because people drive cars for a living. And they will do this kind of thing to disrupt the technology.
Yeah, once one person knows that just messing a little bit with a stop sign will wreak havoc, they will do it just to delight in the chaos. That is terrible, because people are terrible. Well, Mazda has announced a breakthrough in engine technology. So, yeah, the internal combustion engine, I'm not dead yet. I don't want to go on the cart.
So they have this engine. This has been tried in the past. This is an engine that does not combust the cylinder through a spark plug or any other means. It's pure compression. So it's like you just compress it to the point that it combusts naturally. And that's a huge savings. You know, it's an engine that everybody's wanted for a long time. There is a small problem, cold weather. In cold weather, the cylinder might not combust. So what have they done to solve that problem? They've added spark plugs.
Well, I guess once the engine heats up, they can stop using the spark plugs, I guess, because, you know, once it's compressed to that point, it would be fine because it's still going to generate heat. I mean, there's still an explosion in there, and that's what we're harnessing. But, yeah, it's easy to imagine. It's like, we're just going to start this with a spark plug, and it'll be okay.
So they claim it's a huge deal. I don't really know enough about this technology to know, like, how much performance increases. I think it saves a lot of fuel for whatever reason. And they're real excited about it. They are not going to share it with anybody else. So if you want it, you got to drive a Mazda.
Nice. It'll be interesting to see when the production vehicles will head out that. I think I missed that in the article, if there is actually plans to introduce this in a production vehicle, or if this is just going to be a curiosity on a developer's
Yeah, I think it might have been 2018 or 2020. They're definitely like, this is going to be our thing.
Oh, Tesla is seeking $1.5 billion in junk bonds, and that's to fund the Model 3 production. So this was the most horrifying thing about this was I was reading, and Elon Musk was like, yeah, it's time to get some more money again. Let's do some junk bonds. And it'll be fine. And everybody's like, that sounds good.
So a junk bond, bonds are rated. If you don't know about bonds, bonds are rated for how safe they are. So if you're like investing for old people or Social Security, you cannot play in the junk bond market. That money needs to be safe. A junk bond is a much more risky investment. And because of that, it has a higher yield. So it's like, well, yeah, this is a little risky, but look how much yield we're going to give you. And that's what they've done here to the tune of $1.5 billion.
Still probably nowhere near Bitcoin's yield, although probably not as volatile.
So, I mean, the idea here is if Tesla goes out of business, you're in trouble. Now, this, I only added this just because everybody, every week we do a Musk story and they're like, he's the golden god. Well, this is from 2015. And in 2015, he had already taken $4.9 billion. Now, remember, he just borrowed $1.5 to finish this this car. In 2015, it was $4.9 billion. That wasn't borrowed. That was from the government. That was free money.
Yeah, it's not. And we're not saying that Tesla is doing anything bad. They're spending money faster than they're making money. But they are making money at the things that they're spending money to make on, I guess.
Like, well,
the profit from Project X goes to fund Pie in the Sky Project Y, which is also making money, which funds it. It almost seems like a pyramid scheme of profitable ventures. I don't know.
The hope is that somewhere out there on the horizon, who knows how far away, eventually it turns like Amazon. Eventually it turns around. It starts making money, and you've got this juggernaut of infrastructure and branding and all that stuff. But,
or it could all come down like a house of cards.
And we are throwing tax dollars at this. And it seems good. It's green. It makes you feel good, right? But yeah, you really got to temper your expectations when it comes to these kind of things.
Well, Blizzard and DeepMind have turned StarCraft II into an AI research lab.
This is really cool. This is instead of cats per second, we can measure pylons per second. So they've put the I think they have like 65,000 matches as the case that your learning case, and they're going to make it 650,000. But they're giving this out there. They're giving you an API and a Linux based version of this, and they're saying go and teach your AIs to play StarCraft.
This should be a lot of fun to play with. Maybe this is a new benchmark thing that we can do. Between GPU and Vega and all the other stuff. You did see our Vega coverage, right? There's a video on Vega. You should totally go check that out.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about Vega in the hardware section because by the time you see this, the previous day, you should have a Vega video. So if you're like, how did you ignore that? Well, then you're not watching all the videos on the channel. What's wrong with you?
And it's only the first of many, many Vega videos. The Linux performance was not really where I wanted it to be. With updating Mesa and even vanilla out of the box Ubuntu, so we've got a lot of work to do with the Vega GPUs, but it should be good. It's an interesting product. The world's best Dota 2 players just got owned by killer AI. So yeah, this is more AI playing games
and Musk again. But this is a little bit of a non-story. So this was not an AI playing Dota in 5v5. This was a 1v1 me bro. And so this is just the AI being able to move the character and use the abilities in a way that can beat the best Dota players. So they're not working together. They're not, you know, taking down towers. They're not winning. But that is the ultimate goal, and he claims that they will get there one day.
So I'm sure that we'll hear more about that in the future. NASA is looking at moving back to atomic rockets. So this was basically like nuclear-powered rocket engines. I don't know how I feel about that.
Well, considering, you know, we have had rockets blow up in the atmosphere, you got to keep that in mind. If that's a nuclear reactor, that's real bad.
It's going to scatter radioactive stuff over half the continent.
Or EMP. It's real bad. But so what they've done here, the original one that they tested was a high test uranium, I think, or was it plutonium? Whatever it was. It was a very refined version of that. This is a lower refined version of that. It's not as hot. I think the original one was 5,000 Fahrenheit, right around 5,000 Fahrenheit. In space, maybe not that big a deal, but it's risky. A risky thing to have a 5,000 degree furnace burning, you know, 30 feet from your crew. Maybe not that much. But yeah, they're looking at this would reduce the time to Mars, and of course, cheap fuel. So,
well, yeah, it's a nuclear rocket. Didn't we learn from Fallout this is a bad idea?
Yeah, what if you get like a crazy, you know, like what if they go to Mars and they get like Mars madness and they come back? The other cool thing about this is it's sort of a, you know, mobile. Once you get to where you're going, you just land this thing and you've got a generator.
Yay, nuclear. Nuclear is not necessarily all bad. It's just that nuclear made by the lowest bidder is maybe not a good idea sometimes. It's when it's flying at, you know, 900 miles an hour or whatever. It's probably bad. So apparently we're planning a manned moon mission because this company wants to put a cell tower on the moon. Part-time scientists. This is just a PR move.
It's a non-story. You can tell when you go through the story, you can tell it's a non-story because it's like Vodafone is sponsoring LTE technology and they're dropping rovers and they're like four Audi rovers that appeared in the Alien movie. So it's like, wow, could you brand anything? These rovers cannot withstand the dark side of the moon. The temperatures will kill them that night. So they're going to land them. They're going to call home, shoot some video, and show the original moon landing site, which maybe that'll silence the conspiracy theory.
No.
Probably not. So they're going to show you the original moon landing site. They're going to stream it back with LTE, and then they're going to die.
Wow. Just wow. I have a feeling that this probably won't actually happen because they're going to get all their PR mileage out of this, out of stories like this, without actually having to do it.
Possibly.
Yeah. Could be wrong. Could totally be wrong. Maybe not. I don't know. Let's talk about carbon nanotubes, random number generation. So it turns out we may be able to build true random number generators easily. I think this was on a silicon substrate. I did not understand 100%. But I think that the carbon nanotubes are actually the generator for the one or zero.
Yeah, they have two inverters, and when one of them comes on, they can't predict what it'll be. There's way to predict. So you get an actual random number.
It's two inverters wired to each other such that they lose power and they come on and both of them are on, but because they're wired into each other, one of them has to turn off and you don't know which one.
And so the nanotubes create a situation where what influences that is something that we can't predict at all, but is random. So if you're not hip to random number generators, doing them in software is never reliable. Computers can't be random, it turns out. So you have to do them with hardware, and this is like a spray. You can spray it. So any tiny device can now have a true random number generator.
So our next story, our closing story, it's about fidget spinners. This is terrible. It's just really, really, really terrible.
Yeah. Now, we realize this is not technology related, but who could resist this story?
What are you talking about? A fidget spinner is totally technology. They make RGB fidget spinners, Bluetooth fidget spinners.
Well, it turns out the RGB one is their weakness because they might burst into flames.
So, yeah, maybe a little bit less fidget spinner and a little bit more industrial waste batteries disposed of in a very clever way.
So the U.S. Product Safety Commission has released guidelines on fidget spinner safety. I'm sure this is like a 12-page document. You need to download it and print it and read it three or four times.
Frame it, put it on the wall.
Before you engage in any more fidget spinning. Now, the terrifying thing about this article, Chuck, cut back over to the scroll down a little bit. See that? See that lodged in that throat? There were three instances of people over 14 years of age swallowing a fidget spinner. How does that happen? So, spin safely.
Spin safely, and good night, everyone. See you next week. Maybe sooner. I don't know.
Maybe never if we spin irresponsibly.